Hello, I'm Jason Young, the general manager at WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. My job is to help keep things running at the station. However, there are many more important people involved in helping to define WCBN as a university and community mainstay. Today, I am joined by Dr. Liz Wasson. Liz currently works as a science writer for the University of Michigan. She also hosts Break Your Radio every Tuesday night.
Maybe WCBN also is like a behemoth. It's like a herd of cats that also, it's like contained within a herd of cats that you're all trying to round up as a general manager. That's a little bit how I felt. And sometimes you just have to be zen about it, and then all the cats just kind of come to you because you're holding a treat. Turn the microphones on and all the cats come meowing.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's get started. Liz, where are you from?
I grew up in Wisconsin, in southeast Wisconsin, and then I went off to college in Houston, Texas. And I half grew up in Chicago, so mm-hmm. my mom was working hard and sometimes would pass me off to my aunt and uncle in Chicago. So yeah, when I was little, I was hanging out both in Wisconsin and Chicago. And then when I went off to Houston for college, my mom moved all across Wisconsin, and so my home has shifted quite a bit since college.
Okay. So then, how did you arrive in Ann Arbor?
Well, I got really into what I was studying when I was in Houston. And I was doing ecological field work on the East Coast. And we were based on a barrier island off the coast of Georgia. And I was catching grasshoppers at field sites from Florida to Maine and everywhere in between. And so I was excited about that. I wrote a thesis as an undergrad, and thereafter I applied for grad schools. And the University of Michigan was one of the top. And so it was one of the ones that I applied to, and I came.
All right. And so around what time was that?
That was, I think I came here in 2007.
Okay. And so then did you get involved with WCBN right away, or
in 2009?
Okay.
So I was doing I was pretty busy with grad school, but around my department, this was on the second floor of the Krauss Natural Science Building, there were a couple WCBN stickers on people's doors, and I particularly remember the the wombat cobra bat narwhal. Maybe the W wasn't a wombat, was it? But in any case,
I think it's a wombat cobra bunny narwhal.
Bat.
What's a bat?
I don't think bunny.
I thought it was a bunny.
Okay. Well, in any case, okay. I love that sticker, and it's a cool sticker. It's pretty old by now. Like, I don't see it around very much, which is why we can't really remember it. But so then I started asking around about that, and we had this field course where we would go to Pinckney and spend the weekends up there camping out and running around in the forest and collecting data. And so there was a GSI up there with us, and she was doing the Sounds of the Subcontinent show. And so I started asking her about WCBN, and one night we were sitting on our bunks and talked a lot about what being a DJ was like, and so that's how I joined here. But before then, my first experience with radio was kind of life-changing in a way. I mean, I was always into music and, you know, like had my little collection of CDs and tapes and had my Walkman that I would listen to under the bed sheets when I was younger and past my bedtime. And so my dad lived in Champaign, Urbana, and I went to visit him. I think it must have been in the early stages, in the first 2 years of college. And he was a DJ. He still is at WEFT, WEFT, in Champaign, Urbana. And so he brought me in for two of his shows, an international show, and there was another one. And that was the first time I had set foot in a radio station. And, you know, seeing a radio station's music library for the first time is intense and, you know, almost, I guess, spiritual and overwhelming in a good way. And just that opportunity for exploring this huge treasure trove of new music was I guess, lasted somehow in me and my persona. And our music library is pretty amazing as well. I mean, it changes. It's so dynamic that you come in here and you could explore this music library for a really long time, right? But because it changes, you never stop, I guess.
And I guess how big do you think WCBN's music library is?
Oh, I know this. I have a spreadsheet of the data because Jim Campbell, our chief engineer, measured, you know, the width of a CD, the width of a vinyl album, and then extrapolated based on how much, like, yardage of shelving space that we have in the station. And so he's told me before, I'm going to completely botch the actual numbers, but he compared our music library to the height of what's that building here? It used to be the tallest building. It's on William Street. It's an apartment building. He talks about how like a stack of CDs would be twice the height of that building, something like that.
Okay.
In our library. I can give you those numbers if you want.
Oh, I definitely want to follow up with you on that then. Wow. That's, I mean, again, just thinking about like the height of the apartment buildings around Ann Arbor, that's definitely got to be pretty up there. Wow. Okay, I know it was big. I didn't think it was that big.
Yeah, we've got a lot of music, and that doesn't even count the digital stuff, and I'm not sure that counts the stuff in the cage either. Okay. And it doesn't count the stuff that we... I mean, it only counts the stuff that we keep, which I guess that makes sense. Okay.
So, how did you make the decision to get involved in radio?
I think it had to do with me being in grad school in my third year, and I had a really great time in my first 2 years. And then it kind of waned my enthusiasm for what I was doing. And so I felt as though I needed something to fill in my time so that I would enjoy myself more and not just be doing work all the time. So, yeah, I think I had been thinking about it. I had been talking to people about it. And it was writing a research proposal for a PhD, probably, that finally pushed me to come to one of the Sunday training sessions.
Okay. So how did that first training session go for you?
Real shite, actually. On one hand, and on the other hand, it was perfect. Because I came in, and I'm this, you know, overachieving PhD student. So I come in, and it's chaos down here, right? There's stickers everywhere. Nobody's here. Or there were people kind of milling about, but I'm like, hello, excuse me, is anybody here to help with people who are interested in getting trained? And Kristen Summerall happened to be here, and the trainer happened to not be here for some inexplicable reason. And so Kristen kind of rolled her eyes and said, okay, I can lead the training session. I think there were two other people who came in and were wondering the same thing. And so Kristen was the one who showed us around, who showed us the ropes and trained us on the gear in here to make our demo tape. And if she hadn't been here, then I would have walked out and never come back.
Hmm.
So I blame it on Kristen. You can blame it on Kristen.
All right. I'll make sure to remind her. So then, to your knowledge, what is the story of WCBN, or I guess like an element of history about WCBN that stands out to you?
I guess, you know, it started as a, what do you call it? Like a closed circuit? Is that what you call it? Or it was a radio station that closed current that was broadcast only within a building on campus. So only in the residence halls on the University of Michigan campus. And that was just the way that it was wired, the way that it was structured. And then after that, we got an antenna and a transmitter and started broadcasting to the broader community. And, you know, there's some interesting like pieces of history, such as, why am I forgetting everything right now? The woman from SNL, so that former SNL star was here. Ken Friedman was the programming director and, you you know, he locked himself in here after Reagan won the election mm-hmm. and played It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To for like 6 straight hours. They had some really interesting broadcasts back in the day. And Tom yeah. Bray has access to some clips that he still has. But they played around with the form in a way that I think was really creative and revolutionary. And I mean, there were some sad parts of the history too. I think it was just before I came here that there was a program guide that had some caricatures of people on the front that were found to be offensive by some people. And so WCBN had to sort of actually had to eat the costs of printing those program guides and didn't pass those out anymore. And there was another incident that Rob Sellers was involved in. I think we might have a reprint of the article on a poster board somewhere around here, but there have been some controversies surrounding WCBN, but somehow we've outlived those. We've pushed through. And Arwolf's show had a different name in the past.
Okay.
But after one of these controversies, he changed it to Face the Music. And so that had to do with this sentiment of WCBN and people in general just, you know, stepping up and facing the music and confronting whatever ideas that we put forth and justifying them or apologizing, you know, just like doing what it takes to be sincere and authentic about our actions. And maybe that's part of what WCBN is. It's like, you know, you're at a mic and you're live and you need to make choices from the seat of your pants that you can believe in, I guess.
What has been your role within the station, I guess both in like the past when you first started to present? Like, what do you do now?
Well, I've always been an enthusiastic member of the WCBN community. So just like a learner, you know, figuring out what this place is and learning about the artists and the genres that I wouldn't otherwise come across, which is not a rare experience here at WCBN. And figuring out, you know, what it is to work with all these different kinds of people. You know, if it's as small as interfacing with the DJs who come before and after your show, or if it is as involved as, you know, helping with the fundraiser in more than a superficial way, or being the general manager here and learning what everybody else does, the program director and the development director and just all the pieces that make this place function on the daily and over time. You know, we have a long history of like kind of scrapping together this place and mm-hmm. somehow our jalopy keeps rolling.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing to observe. So now, you know, I was the general manager for, 1 or 2 years. And then I have been a DJ. I still am a DJ. I engineered the Living Writers show for about 8 or 9 years. And I wanted to do that from the start. And so that has been a really lovely experience. And I was trained in Prod A, which has been really nice. So just kind of sitting in whenever people happen to need an engineer. But yeah, for in large part, DJing.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess speaking of radio, you didn't ask me this, but I graduated with my PhD here, and then I wasn't sure exactly what I would do because what I did know was that I wasn't planning to become a professor and do everything that that would take. So I wasn't going to get a postdoc and then get a tenure track position and then fight for tenure and publish or perish. What I did instead was I bought an RV and traveled around the country. And while I was doing that, I set goals for myself and I was trying to figure out how to figure out the next step. And so I just chose 3 things that I could see myself doing or getting involved in somehow as a career, as a jumping off point. One was radio, of course. One was kids somehow, and one was alternative energy. And I started with radio, and I just never left that first option. And so I had gotten in touch on a friend's recommendation with a Knight Wallace fellow here on campus who worked in radio. And then I just had an informational meeting with him on the phone. And he referred me to some people who were in the general direction of where I was going. And I called those people up, and they referred me to other people. And I was just calling up all these people involved in radio across the country. And so as I was traveling, I was visiting radio stations, and I was meeting DJs, and I was like kind of observing their communities. And it was awesome. I mean, the radio community and the podcasting community, as I have experienced it, is chill and welcoming and non-competitive and friendly and good. And I brought that up because I was just thinking about the humble beginnings of WCBN. And I would call the Berkeley station.
It's KALX.
KALX, yep. KALX. And I went to visit their station, which is pretty cool. And they have, in a sort of glass case, they have a cigar box in which, like, the first engineer had constructed whatever it was, like some critical piece of their, you know, the technical side of their radio station. So maybe like the hub of their carrier current or their tiny transmitter when they were first born. But I just thought it was really cool that they had this souvenir of their history, of a cigar box that made their station run, you know?
Yeah. Could you just share a little bit of your experience as general manager? This was back in 2010?
It was like 2009 to 2010 or 11.
Okay.
What do you want to know?
Just kind of like, how was your experience at that time? I think you're obviously running this radio station, and you've got to kind of tend to the various needs of the people while also making sure that certain things are operating. But also, I think that this was about the time that the transmitter project started, as well as the trying to get university sponsorship.
It was around those times, yeah. So my situation was funny because I came in 2009, and the general manager at the time, Brent Ryu, is that how you say his name? Ryuchs, was leaving. He's now in Los Angeles, and he's really into films over there. But so he was just leaving, and he was kind of frantically casting about for a replacement general manager, and it looked like nobody was stepping up. And so I was just like, well, I've been here for, I don't know, a couple weeks, so I'll volunteer. And so that is how I became the general manager, really. Okay. Was volunteering for it. So it was interesting because I didn't have a holistic view of the place when I came in. And, so my main role, as I saw it, was to keep things just running smoothly, to keep the community happy, as you say, just to make sure that people could be their creative selves in this space, I guess. And, so I think it may have been Brent, or maybe somebody just before him, who started the new transmitter project. And, we continued making headway with that when I was in that position. I think we're pretty close now.
A couple more months, hopefully.
Like 10 years later.
Yeah.
And then what happened with university sponsorship was that we needed a new chief engineer. So I think there was a gap in time when we didn't have one, and Tom Bray was acting as the interim engineer, but by no means the permanent. And so one of my tasks was to work with the board of directors to figure out how to hire a replacement. And we were so lucky to get Jim Campbell. And it was an interesting thing to navigate, because when we were under housing, they wanted us to offer the position as a temporary position and all that that entails. And that would mean that we would have to go through this hiring process, I think, every year. It wasn't clear exactly what was going on. And so I just didn't want to do it that way. It made more sense to me to have a permanent position that we could offer somebody and not have to scramble every year to figure out, because our chief engineer is critical, especially when we have a transmitter program going on and when we have all the tasks to keep the status quo at the station, to keep things working, but we also want to grow in certain areas. We want to make Prod A better. We want to make our audio repositories and our archive better. And so that, to me, required a chief engineer who could depend on us as much as we would depend on him. And so that was a negotiation with housing that involved, like, housing was kind of like, you know, we negotiated that housing would phase us out, essentially, in exchange for us having the chief engineer as a permanent position. And so that's how that went. And then so meanwhile, we were putting together sort of like selling points for WCBN that we could take into administrative offices and say, hey, can you please be our sponsor? And so that started, like, that whole shift from one sponsorship to another started when I was the GM. And then, you know, it's been the efforts of a lot of people over the time in between that has led to the glory days that we have now, you know, including you and including Cameron, mm-hmm. Including Carl and Ben Yi, you know. It really is a community effort over a long span of time that keeps us moving.
Yeah. And then in terms of funding, I guess, how does WCBN obtain funding?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah.
So our primarily through fundraising. And we have our fundraiser every year at the beginning of the year in February or so. And we rely on the goodwill and support of our listeners in the community and on campus. So we get a large part of our discretionary funding through that. And that's in large part how we're paying for the transmitter efforts and stuff. And then our overhead our overhead, so our space, our telephones, I think, are probably still being paid by the university.
Yes.
So the university supports us in other ways that are more structural, I guess, and infrastructural. Okay. And of course, the regents own the license. So I actually am not sure whether we have to pay for renewal of the license or anything like that. But things like that are taken care of by the university, thankfully.
And so then you were starting as GM at an interesting time nationally when there was the economic crisis, I guess, that a lot of people called of 2008, 2009. So, like, how did that, if it did at all, affect WCBN's operations?
Well, it didn't affect our operations per se. But, yeah, I guess you could look at a historical record and see that our fundraiser totals lagged a bit in those years. And then we've picked them up quite a bit in the past years after that.
Like, do you know roughly what they were at the time?
I think we were looking at like half
of
what we're making now. So 20, 25.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, yeah, that's a pretty big difference.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess, like, do you think that something, I guess, outside of the economic situation, have there been any particular changes in regard to fundraising that you've noticed over the years?
Well, we have had the wonderful fortune of Cameron Bothner joining the station and being an enthusiastic learner and implementer here. So I wonder what we did in our fundraisers before he was here. Did we keep all those records on paper? How did we do that? I'm so entrenched in the revolution of the fundraiser database that Cameron introduced. And so we have this digital database now that we use in real time as we're taking in donations and current fundraisers. And the database not only helps us take in the monies for each fundraiser in recent years, but it also allows us to keep those data and look back at totals of prior years of trends in giving by not only the community as a whole, but we could look at, you know, whether certain members have dropped off or whether we see more people coming out of the woodwork. Because I don't know, it gives us a different sort of view of how we are doing our fundraisers and our fundraiser inventories and stuff for the premium items. Also, I think we've been picking up speed when it comes to student recruitment. I don't know if you've noticed that, but well, you've spearheaded a lot of that. But yeah, so with more minds and more efforts and more energy behind things like the fundraiser, then we have more ideas just more legwork when it comes to making our listeners aware that the fundraiser is coming up. So be prepared for our fundraiser with mail outs, things like that. And events. Like one thing that we did in past years was we had a bacon dance party for one of the fundraisers, and we promoted that like crazy. And so, actually a bunch of us came to the station and we created a promo and I mixed it. And the bacon dance party was held at the Elks Lodge, and we got pounds and pounds of bacon and cooked it in the kitchen of the Elks Lodge while people danced below. And, you know, every couple minutes we would come down with a new batch of bacon. And if you ever want to be the most loved person in a room, then walk through a crowded room with a platter of bacon that people can have and enjoy for themselves. Every time we walked down with another sizzling platter of bacon, people became very enthusiastic. And it was a really wonderful sort of tangible way to interface with the community during our fundraiser, right? And I think we were selling bacon for $1 or $2 a piece, you know? And so it was another way just to raise funds, obviously, but to get out there, get our name out there, associate WCBN with fun and bacon and those kinds of things. Those kinds of events that we held with fundraiser, I think, were really fun and really useful.
Yeah, sounds like it. You know, that might be something we have to kind of try out again, then. A bacon dance party.
Bacon dance party.
All right, I'm going to make a note of that.
Crowd pleaser.
And so, again, you've kind of touched on this as well, but how has WCBN changed in your time here? And where do you see it going?
Well, I was thinking about this. I was thinking about what my answer could be for this. And it's not a super simple answer. I mean, some things that I've seen in my 9 years or so of being here is an increase in student involvement, shifts in our sponsorship, of course, sort of cycles in the amount of involvement that people have, you know. Sometimes there are certain periods of time when more people are doing more original work, right? So they're making podcasts or they are spearheading their own shows and hosting their own shows. And sometimes it's not as much of that. Sometimes it's like still enjoyable and dynamic content, but it's more along the lines of sort of DJing and exploring the music library that we already have. So when I was thinking about that, I mean, I've only been here for 9 years and this place has been here for more than 50. So I think it's always changing and it's always cycling. And but it's always staying more or less the same. I mean, WCBN is a beast of free form, and that comes in many forms, right? A free form is where we're not limited to any one genre, and we're not limited to much of anything when it comes to format at all. And that applies to the people who are here too. You know, they're very, we have eccentric, a diverse and eccentric group of people that has its own, you know, our community kind of encompasses so many different beliefs that all fall under the purview of, like, we do what we want. We do what we believe in, and we don't constrain ourselves to any sort of dogma, except for free form. What question was I answering? How things have changed. So yeah, I mean, things are always changing. There's always different people. The turnover on a campus is very high, but then again, you have the community members who have been here for decades. And so while things are changing, things are largely staying the same, thankfully. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. And yeah, so no, that answers both questions. And then I know you also, you have engineered for several shows in the past, but currently you engineer for Living Writers.
Well, I have not been engineering so much in the past couple, in the past one or two semesters.
Okay.
But yes, I love the Living Writers show, and I love engineering for the Living Writers show. So wait, did you have a question, or should I just?
So I was going to ask, between Living Writers and any of the other things you've done down in the station, kind of like who's one of the most interesting people you've had the privilege of crossing paths with down here?
Yeah, I love engineering for the Living Writers show because, yeah, it's not, I mean, it is incredible the types of personalities and authors that come through our humble radio station here. We have Pulitzer Prize winners like Heather Ann Thompson, who won a Pulitzer Prize, I think last year, was one of our guests. Did I already mention T. Hetzel? I really enjoy working for T. Hetzel. And she is the one who reaches out to all these people and has the kind and inviting soul that persuades people to actually come visit our humble radio station. And so that is how we get National Book Award winners. Celeste Ng wrote my favorite book of last year, Little Fires Everywhere. She was here. Jennifer Egan, who wrote A Visit from the Goon Squad, was here, and she was very cool. Rebecca Solnit. Lots, and there are so many different people who come down here and who are wonderful. But maybe I have two or three stories. One is that Arundhati Roy came. And so she is a woman, an author from India, who writes about a lot of things. I think she has written at least one novel. She is maybe an activist and an advocate for democracy, especially, as far as my understanding. And so she came to give a talk about a book that she had recently written. And she came at an odd hour, so we were not broadcasting it live. It was a pre-recorded interview. And I had recently started my job here. So I was pretty busy. And so I ran to the station and knew it was going to be, we were going to use our mobile unit, which is rare for Living Writers, but which is really fun, which means that we don't necessarily have access, or for whatever reason, our guests are at another location. And so we have to cart the equipment that we will need, including microphones and recording equipment and everything, to a different location so that we can do our interview. And that was the case for Arundhati Roy. And so this was like, this is actually a great story about WCBN in general, because what happened was I came down here, and this was, I think it was the first time that we had done a mobile unit Living Writers pre-recorded episode. And so I came early and I was just trying to get everything straight. And this being the first time, I knew how to use the recorder, but I had no experience with the soundboard. And so I'm hooking up all this stuff and just trying to figure it out on the fly. And, but you know, I had been trained in Prod A. I'm familiar with soundboards and stuff like that. And it just so happened that there were critical people hanging out at the station at the time whose help I was grateful to have. So I think Carl was here, Marvin was here. And so I'm running around and, you know, doing this relatively independently, but they would kind of pop their heads in and help me at critical moments of me plugging something into another thing, testing the microphones, finding the cords for this stuff, and wrapping all of this stuff up and putting it in crates. And so I was figuring all of this out with some help from people. And meanwhile, I hear from T, and she says, Arundhati Roy did not realize that there was a time difference between Chicago, where she's coming from, and Michigan. And so they're coming at a different time. And I was like, oh, phew, that actually gives me a little more time to figure things out. And then Carl had found a conference room that we could use upstairs here. And so I'm in the midst of all this stuff. Finally, Arundhati, I recognized her. She comes down in the hallway of the station, just outside the station. And I was like, oh, it is wonderful to see you. I'm prepping all of this stuff. Let me help you up to the conference room and you can get settled as I prep all this equipment. And I come back down. I'm still kind of harried and I'm running around and I see this guy who's wearing this black cap and he's behaving strangely. So he's like covering his face and all of this stuff. And I'm looking at him and I was wondering, like, hey, what are you guys here for? You know, why are you lurking about in the hallways outside of WCBN? And they were with Arundhati Roy. And I looked a little closer at one of the people and I was like, is that John Cusack? And he reluctantly said yes, that he was John Cusack. He loves Arundhati Roy's work and he's from Chicago. And so he just kind of invited himself on this road trip to campus so that he could hang out with one of his idols or whatever. And so I was like, okay, yeah, whatever, John Cusack, go up to the conference room. You know, I'm still getting all of this stuff ready. And so we actually have a picture of me and T, Arundhati, and John Cusack and some other people. And John, you can't see his face because he didn't want to take the picture and his cap is obscuring his face. So that was a fun, that was a fun time. Alice Walker has been here.
Oh.
But another one of the for my show, I have interviewed Mira and Julia Holter, which has been great. But another one of my favorite things that I've done in terms of engineering while I've been here was one of the first interviews I did was with this guy, Howard Fishman, who plays guitar. He spent his time paying his dues in New Orleans, busking, and then came back to New York. And I interviewed him. It was a wonderful interview. He thought it was going to be 5 or 10 minutes as like a promotional thing for his appearance here in Ann Arbor, wherever that was. But it wound up being like an hour-long conversation. And at the very end, I asked him to play something. And he had never played a song like during an interview or over the phone before, and he just busted out his acoustic guitar and started tuning it on the phone, and he debuted a song of his on a cell phone conversation and on WCBN. So that was really neat.
Wow. Yeah, so it's like the powers of radio combined with the Liz.
There's so much magic in radio.
Yeah.
Things come together, and that's kind of what I meant with that story with John Cusack and Arundhati Roy, was it was just everything coming together in the best way possible.
Yeah. A lot of wild things happen in the basement of the SAB. You never know who you're going to meet.
You never know who you're going to meet. You never know like what theme is going to pop up in your freeform show. You know, one time I was pulling things out kind of more or less at random from the music library and noticed that I was finding a lot of bananas, you know, like banana songs,
mm-hmm.
artists with banana in the name. And I just created this banana set. You know, and it's just, that's kind of a poor example, but yeah, another example might be, I've done a couple podcasts while I was on the road. I was creating these podcasts in my motorhome recording studio and they were broadcast on the air here at WCBN. And one of those podcast episodes was an interview with this guy who owned a thrift store in Dallas And the radio was on at his thrift store during our interview, and I was a little bummed about that when I went back for editing, because I was like, oh, how am I going to edit this? Because you're going to hear the choppiness of the songs in the background, you know? But I found out, I figured out what each of those songs were. And so I was able to mesh those songs with, you know, just recordings of those songs and edit it that way. But it was cool because I learned a little bit about that radio station in Dallas. And it just so happened that the songs that that radio station was playing during that interview happened to match the theme of what we were talking about in just magical ways. And so it's unclear whether, you know, whether our life drives the music that we hear, I guess, or whether maybe the music that we hear drives our life and what we talk about. You know, I don't know if I could sufficiently describe what the magic of radio means to me, but those are some examples that sort of get at the edges of it.
Wow. I don't know, you're just like a person who, like, I don't know, it sounds like you happened into like a lot of coincidences as well. Yeah.
But fortune favors the prepared mind, Jason.
Yes.
And so when you're open to free form, when you're open to exploration, I think that's when you make the best discoveries, maybe.
I can feel that.
Yeah.
We'll end on my favorite question so far. What has WCBN meant to you? Yeah.
Well, so I think maybe two major things. One is what we have been talking about throughout our conversation, which is the idea of discovery and exploration and discovery. So, you know, often in WCBN, you find what you didn't even know you were looking for. You learn things about yourself. We were just talking about how Jim Dwyer has mentioned that as a teacher, he's a retired teacher now, but he cites WCBN as a learning experience for him to be able to think on his feet in the classroom, you know, in his career. And so I think, yeah, a discovery of music, a discovery of the talents of other people, a discovery of things inside yourself, a discovery of the community here. And I guess that's the second thing, is the WCBN community of people, especially on at a place like the University of Michigan. It is a campus filled with students, transient students, so high turnover and social group that is always changing. You know, when I was a student, it wasn't, that didn't cross my mind that I would be leaving and the community would linger behind me and what that would mean to the people that I left. And now I am the person who's here more permanently. And so I see my friends leaving. I see my social network changing and shrinking and growing. And so WCBN is a mixture of that. You know, there's a lot of turnover, but it has provided a more permanent community that that is more stable for me. And so, yeah, a lot of really interesting townies who have been here for a while and who will be here for a while, that I can turn to for advice and support and friendship has been great. I mean, we have a WCBN bowling league. We've had a WCBN kickball league in the past. It's nice to have a more permanent community in a transient space.
All right, well, thank you very much, Liz.
Thank you for having me.
This podcast was recorded and produced in the WCBN studios in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library.